Chapter 38. Six Stories. Matt would have gotten out and pulled the coach himself if he could. He thought they might have moved faster. The streets were already full with the sun not all the way up, wagons and carts wending their way noisily through the crowds and wind-blown dust, to shouts and curses both from drivers and those forced to get out of the way. So many barges slid along the canals and the bargemen's poles that a man almost could have walked the canals like streets, stepping from one barge to the next. A noisy hum hung over the gleaming white city. Ebudar seemed to be trying to make up for time lost yesterday, not to mention at High Chazaline, and the Feast of Lights, and well it might, considering that tomorrow night was the Feast of Embers, with Madden's Day celebrating the founder of Altara 2 days after that, and the Feast of the Half-Moon the following night. Southerners had a reputation for industry, but he thought it was because they had to work so hard to make up for all the festivals and feast days. The wonder was that they had the strength for it. Eventually the coaches did reach the river, drawing up at one of the long stone landings that jutted out into the water, all lined with steps for boarding the boats tied alongside. Sticking a wedge of dark yellow cheese and a butt end of bread into his pocket, he stuffed the basket well under the seat. He was hungry, but someone in the kitchens had been in too much of a hurry. Most of the basket was filled with a clay pot full of oysters, but the kitchens had forgotten to cook them. Scrambling down behind Lan, he left Nalesian and Beslan to help Vannon and the others down from the last coaches. Nearly a dozen men, and not even the Kyrianan really small, they had been jammed in like apples in a barrel and clambered out stiffly. Matt strode ahead of the warder toward the lead coach, the Ashandarai slanted across his shoulder. Nynaeve and Elaine were both going to get a piece of his mind, no matter who was listening. Trying to keep Mogedion hidden, not to mention two of his men dead. He was going to... Suddenly very conscious of Lan towering behind him like a stone statue with that sword on his hip, he amended his thoughts. The daughter heir, at least, was going to hear about keeping that sort of secret. Nynaeve was standing on the landing, tying on her blue-plumed hat and talking back up into the coach when he reached it.
"We'll work out, of course, but who would think the sea folk of all people would demand such a thing, even just in private?"
"But Nynaeve," Elaine said as she stepped down with her green-plumed hat in her hand, "if last night was as glorious as you say, how can you complain about—"
That was when they became aware of him and Lan. Of Lan, really. Nynaeve's eyes opened wider and wider, filling her face as it reddened to shame 2 sunsets. Maybe 3. Elaine froze with 1 foot still on the coach step, giving the warder such a frown you would have thought he had sneaked up on them. Lan gazed down at Nynaeve, though, with no more expression than a fence post, and for all Nynaeve appeared ready to crawl under the coach and hide, she stared up at Lan as if no one else existed in the world. Realizing her frown was wasted there, Elaine took her foot off the step and moved out of the way of Rihanna and the 2 wise women who had shared the coach, to Marla and a graying Saldaean woman named Janira. But the daughter heir did not give up. Oh, no. She transferred that scowl to Matt Cawthon, and if it altered a whit, it was to deepen. He snorted and shook his head. Usually when a woman was in the wrong, she could find so many things to blame on the nearest man that he wound up thinking maybe he really was at fault. In his experience, old memories or new, there were only 2 times a woman admitted she was wrong. When she wanted something, and when it snowed at midsummer. Nynaeve seized at her braid, but not as if her heart was in it. Her fingers fumbled and fell away, and she started wringing her hands instead.
"Lan," she began unsteadily, "you mustn't think I would talk about—"
The warder cut in smoothly, bowing and offering her his arm.
"We are in public, Nynaeve. Whatever you say in public, you may. May I escort you to the boat?"
"Yes," she said, nodding so vigorously that her hat nearly fell off.
She straightened it hurriedly with both hands.
"Yes, in public. You will escort me."
Taking his arm, she regained some measure of composure, at least insofar as her face went. Gathering her dust cloak in her free hand, she practically dragged him across the quay toward the landing. Matt wondered whether she might be ill. He rather enjoyed seeing Nynaeve drop to peg or 6, but she hardly ever let it last 2 breaths. Aes Sedai could not heal themselves. Maybe he should suggest to Elaine that she deal with whatever was wrong with Nynaeve.
He avoided healing like death or marriage himself, but it was different for other people as he saw it. First, though, he had a few choice words to say about secrets. Opening his mouth, he raised an admonitory finger. And Elaine poked him in the chest with hers, her scowl beneath that plumed hat so cold it made his toes hurt.
"Mistress Corley," she said in the icy voice of a queen pronouncing judgment, "explain to Nynaeve and me the significance of those red flowers on the basket, which I see at least you have shame enough to have hidden."
His face went redder than Nynaeve's had thought of. A few paces away, Rhianna Corley and the other two were tying on hats and adjusting dresses the way women did every time they stood up, sat down, or moved three steps. Yet, despite giving their attention to their clothes, they had enough left over for glances in his direction, and for once they were neither disapproving nor startled. He had not known the bloody flowers meant anything. 10 sunsets would not have done for his face.
"So..."
Elaine's voice was low for his ears alone, but it dripped disgust and contempt. She gave her cloak a twitch to keep it from touching him.
"It's true. I could not believe it of you, not even you. I'm sure Nynaeve couldn't. Any promise I made to you is abolished. I would not keep any promise to a man who could force his attentions on a woman, on any woman, but especially on a queen who has offered him... me force my attentions on her!" he shouted.
Or rather, he tried to shout. Choking made it come out in a wheeze. Seizing Elaine's shoulders, he pulled her away from the carriages a little distance. Shirtless dockmen in stained green leather vests hurried by, carrying sacks on their shoulders or rolling barrels along the quay, some pushing low barrows loaded with crates, all giving the coaches a wide berth. The Queen of Altara might not have much power, but her sigil on a coach door ensured that commoners would give it room. Nalissian and Beslan were chatting as they led the Red Arms onto the landing, Vannin bringing up the rear and staring gloomily at the choppy river. He claimed to have a tender belly when it came to boats. The wise women from both coaches had gathered around Rhianna, watching, but they were not close enough to overhear. He whispered hoarsely just the same.
"You listen to me. That woman won't take no for an answer. I say no, and she laughs at me. She's starved me, bullied me, chased me down like a stag. She has more hands than any 6 women I ever met. She threatened to have the serving women undress me if I didn't let her..."
Abruptly, what he was saying hit him, and who he was saying it to. He managed to close his mouth before he swallowed a fly. He became very interested in one of the dark metal ravens inlaid in the haft of the Ashandarai, so he would not have to meet her eyes.
"What I mean to say is, you don't understand," he muttered. "You have it all backwards."
He risked a glance at her under the edge of his hat brim. A faint blush crept into her cheeks, but her face became solemn as a marble bust.
"It appears that I may have misunderstood," she said soberly. "That is very bad of Tylan."
He thought her lips twitched.
"Have you considered practicing different smiles in a mirror, Matt?"
Startled, he blinked.
"What?" "I have heard reliably that that is what young women do who attract the eyes of kings."
Something cracked the sobriety of her voice, and this time her lips definitely twitched.
"You might try batting your eyelashes, too."
Catching her lower lip under her teeth, she turned away, shoulders shaking, dust cloak streaming behind her as she hurried toward the landing. Before she darted beyond hearing, he heard her chortle something about a taste of his own medicine. Rhianna and the wise women scurried in her wake, a flock of hens following a chick instead of the other way around. The few bare-chested boatmen up on their boats stopped coiling lines, or whatever they were doing, and bowed their heads respectfully as the procession went by. Snatching off his hat, Matt considered throwing it down and jumping on it.
Women! He should have known better than to expect sympathy. He would like to throttle the bloody daughter heir, and Nynaeve, too, on general principle.
Except, of course, that he could not. He had made promises, and those dice were still using his skull for a dice cup, and one of the Forsaken might be around somewhere. Settling the hat squarely back on his head, he marched down the landing, brushed past the wise women, and caught up to Elaine. She was still trying to fight down giggles, but every time she cut her eyes his way, the color in her cheeks renewed itself, and so did the giggles. He stared straight ahead.
"Bloody women! Bloody promises!"
Removing his hat long enough to pull a leather cord from around his neck, he reluctantly shoved it in her direction. The silver fox head dangled beneath his fist.
"You and Nynaeve will have to decide which of you wears this. But I want it back when we leave Ebu Dar. You understand? The moment we leave..."
Suddenly he realized he was walking alone. Turning, he found Elaine standing stock still, 2 paces back, staring at him with Rihanna and the rest clustered behind her.
"What's the matter now?" he demanded. "Oh, yes, I know all about Mogedion."
A skinny fellow with red stones on his brass hoop earrings, bending over a mooring line, jerked around so fast at that name that he pitched over the side with a loud yell and a louder splash. Matt did not care who heard.
"Trying to keep her secret, and 2 of my men dead, after you promised... Well, we'll talk about that later. I made a promise, too. I promised to keep the pair of you alive. If Mogedion shows up, she'll go after you, too. Now here..."
He pushed the medallion at her again. She shook her head slowly in puzzlement, then turned to murmur to Rihanna. Only after the older women were on their way toward where Nynaeve stood beckoning them, at the head of a flight of boat stairs, did Elaine take the fox head, turning it over in her fingers.
"Do you have any notion what I would have done to have this for study?"
she said quietly.
"Any notion at all?"
She was tall for a woman, but she still had to look up at him. She might never have seen him before.
"You are a troublesome man, Matt Cawthon. Linny would say I was repeating myself, but you..."
Expelling her breath, Elaine reached up to pull his hat off and slipped the cord over his head. She actually tucked the fox head into his shirt and patted it before handing him his hat.
"I won't wear that while Nynaeve still doesn't have one, or Avienda. And I think they feel the same. You wear it. After all, you can hardly keep your promise if Mogedion kills you. Not that I think she's still here. I think she believes she killed Nynaeve, and I would not be surprised if that was all she came for. You must be careful, though. Nynaeve says there's a storm coming, and she doesn't mean this wind. I..."
That faint blush returned to her cheeks.
"I am sorry I laughed at you."
She cleared her throat, looking away.
"Sometimes I forget my duty to my subjects. You are a worthy subject, Matrim Cawthon. I will see that Nynaeve understands the right of you and Tylin. Perhaps we can help." "No," he spluttered. "I mean, yes. I mean, that is... Oh, kiss a flaming goat if I know what I mean. I almost wish you didn't know the truth."
Nynaeve and Elaine sitting down to discuss him with Tylin over tea. Could he ever live that down? Could he ever again look any of them in the eye afterward? But if they did not, he was between the wolf and the bear with nowhere to run.
"Oh, sheep swallop! Sheep swallop and bloody buttered onions!"
He nearly wished she would call him down for his language the way Nynaeve would, just to change the subject. Her lips moved silently, and for an instant he had the strange impression that she was repeating what he had just said. Of course not. He was seeing things, that was all. Aloud, she said,
"I understand," sounding just as if she did. "Come along now, Matt. We can't waste time standing in one spot."
Gaping, he watched her lift skirts and cloak to make her way along the landing.
She understood? She understood, and not one acid little comment, not one cutting remark? And he was her subject, her worthy subject?
Fingering the medallion, he followed. He had been sure the fight would be to ever get it back. If he lived as long as 2 Aes Sedai, he still would never understand women, and noble women were purely the worst. When he reached the steps Elaine had gone down, the boat's 2 brass-earringed oarsmen were already using their long sweeps to push the vessel away. Elaine was herding Rihanna and the last of the wise women into the cabin, and Lan stood up in the bows with Nynaeve. A shout from Beslan called him on to the next boat, which held all of the men except the warder. "Nynaeve said there wasn't any room for any of us," Nalesian said as the boat rocked its way out into the Elder. "She said we'd crowd them." Beslan laughed, looking around their own boat. Vannin sat beside the cabin door with his eyes closed, trying to pretend he was somewhere else. Harnan and Tad Candel, and Andoran, despite being as dark as either of the boatmen, had climbed atop the cabin. The rest of the Red Arms hunkered about the deck, trying to keep out of the way of the rowers. Nobody went into the cabin, all apparently waiting to see whether Matt and Nalesian and Beslan wanted it. Matt put himself beside the tall bow post, peering after the other boat, crawling on its sweeps just ahead. The wind whipped the dark, choppy waters, and his scarf as well, and he had to hold on to his hat. What was Nynaeve up to? The other nine women on the second boat were all in the cabin, leaving the deck to her and Lan. They stood up in the bows, Lan with his arms folded, Nynaeve gesturing as though explaining. Except that Nynaeve seldom explained anything. Better say never than seldom. Whatever she was doing, it did not last long. There were whitecaps out in the bay, where seafolk rakers and skimmers and soarers heaved at their anchors. The river was not so bad, but the boat still wallowed more than Matt remembered from any previous trip. Before long, Nynaeve was draped over the railing, losing her breakfast while Lan held her. That reminded Matt of his own belly. Tucking his hat under his arm so it could not blow away, he pulled out the wedge of cheese. "Beslan, is this storm likely to break before we come back from the Rahad?" He took a bite of the sharp-tasting cheese. They had 50 different sorts in Ebudar, all good. Nynaeve was still hanging over the side. How much had the woman eaten this morning? "I don't know where we'll shelter if we're caught." He could not think of a single inn he had seen in the Rahad that he would take the women into. "No storm," Beslan said, seating himself on the railing. "These are the winter trade winds. The trades come twice a year, in late winter and late summer. But they have to blow much harder before it comes to storm." He directed a sour look out toward the bay. "Every year those winds brought ships from Taraban and Ar-Adaman. I wonder whether they ever will again." "The wheel weaves," Matt began and choked on a crumb of cheese. Blood and ashes, he was starting to sound like some gray hair resting his aching joints in front of the fireplace. Worrying about taking the women into a rough inn? A year ago, half a year, he would have taken them and laughed when their eyes popped, laughed at every prim sniff. "Well, maybe we'll find you some fun in the Rahad anyway. At the least, somebody will try to cut a purse or pull Elaine's necklace off." Maybe that was what he needed to clean the taste of sobriety from his tongue. Sobriety? Light. What a word to apply to Matt Cawthon. Tallinn must be scaring him more than he thought if he was shriveling up this way. Maybe he needed some of Beslan's sort of fun. That was crazy. He had never seen the fight he would not rather walk around. But maybe... Beslan shook his head. "If anyone can find it, you can, but... we'll be with 7 wise women, Matt. 7. With just 1 at your side, you could slap a man, even in the Rahad, and he would swallow his tongue and walk away. And the women... what's the fun of kissing a woman without the risk she'll decide to stick a knife in you?" "Burn my soul," Nalesian muttered into his beard. "It sounds as though I've dragged myself from bed for a dull morning." Beslan nodded in commiseration. "If we're lucky, though, the Civil Guard does send patrols to the Rahad occasionally, and if they're after smugglers, they dress like anyone else. They seem to think nobody will notice a dozen or so men together carrying swords, whatever they wear. And they're always surprised when the smugglers ambush them, which is what nearly always happens. If Matt's Tavirinluck works for us, we might be taken for the Civil Guard, and some smugglers might attack us before they see the red belts." Nalesian brightened and began rubbing his hands together. Matt glared at them. Maybe Beslan's sort of fun was not what he needed. For one thing, he had more than enough of women with knives. Nynaeve still hung over the side of the boat ahead. That would teach her to gorge herself. Wolfing down the last of the cheese, he began on the bread and tried to ignore the dice in his head. An easy trip with no trouble did not sound bad at all. A quick trip with a quick departure from Ebu Dar. The Rahad was everything he remembered, and everything Beslan feared. The wind made climbing the cracked gray stone steps at the boat landing into a perilous feat, and after that it grew worse. Canals ran everywhere, just as across the river, but here the bridges were plain, the grimy stone parapets broken and crumbling. Half the canals were so silted that boys waded waist-deep in them, and hardly a barge was to be seen. Tall buildings stood crowded together, blocky structures with scabrous once-white plaster gone in huge patches to reveal rotting red brick, bordering narrow streets with broken paving stones. In those streets where even the fragments had not been ripped up. Morning did not really reach into the shadows of the buildings. Dingy laundry hung drying from every third window, except where a structure stood empty. Some did, and those windows gaped like eye sockets in a skull. A sour, sweet smell of decay permeated the air. Last month's chamber pots and ancient refuse moldering wherever it had been flung. And for every fly on the other side of the Eldar, 100 buzzed here in clouds of green and blue. He spotted the peeling blue door of the Golden Crown of Heaven, and shuddered at the thought of taking the women in there if the storm broke, despite what Beslan said. Then he shuddered again for having shuddered. Something was happening to him, and he did not like it. Nynaeve and Elaine insisted on taking the lead, with Rihanna between them and the wise women close behind. Lan stayed at Nynaeve's shoulder like a wolfhound, hand on sword hilt, eyes constantly searching, radiating menace. In truth, he was probably enough protection for 24 pretty 16-year-olds carrying sacks of gold, even here. But Matt insisted that Vannon and the rest keep their eyes open. In fact, the former horse thief and poacher kept so close to Elaine that anyone could have been forgiven for thinking he was her warder, if a rather fat and rumpled one. Beslan rolled his eyes expressively at Matt's instructions, and Elysian irritably stroked his beard and muttered that he could still be in bed. Men strutted arrogantly along the streets, with often ragged vests and no shirts, wearing great brass hoops in their ears and brass finger rings set with colored glass. One knife, or sometimes two, stuck behind their belts. Hands hovering near those knives, they stared as though daring someone to give the wrong twist to a look. Others skulked from corner to corner, doorway to doorway, with hooded eyes, imitating the slat-ribbed dogs that sometimes snarled from a dark alleyway, barely wide enough for a man to squeeze into. Those men hunched over their knives, and there was no way to tell which would run and which stab. By and large, the women made any of the men appear humble, parading in worn dresses and twice as much brass jewelry as the men. They carried knives too, of course, and their bold, dark eyes sent 10 sorts of challenge in every glance. In short, the Rahad was the sort of place where anyone wearing silk could hardly hope to walk 10 steps without being cracked over the head, after which they had best hope to wake stripped to the skin and tossed onto a pile of rubbish in an alley, since the alternative was not to wake at all. But children darted from every second door with chipped pottery cups of water sent by their mothers in case the wise women wished a drink. Men with scarred faces and murder etched into their eyes stared open-mouthed at 7 wise women together, then bobbed jerky bows and inquired politely if they could be of assistance. Was there anything that required carrying? Women, sometimes with as many scars and always eyes to make Tylan flinch, curtsied awkwardly and breathlessly asked whether they might supply directions. Had anyone made a bother of themselves to bring so many wise women? If so, the strong implication was, Tamarla and the rest had no need of troubling themselves if they would just supply the name. Oh, they glared at the soldiers as hotly as ever, though even the hardest flinched away from Lan after a single look, and oddly enough from Vannon. A few of the men growled at Beslan and Elysian whenever they gazed too long at a woman's deep neckline. Some growled at Matt, though he could not understand why. Unlike those two, he was never in danger of his eyeballs falling down the front of a woman's dress. He knew how to look discreetly. Nynaeve and Elaine were ignored for all their finery, and so was Rihanna in her red wool dress. They did not have the red belt, but they did have the protection of those belts. Matt realized that Beslan had been right. He could empty his purse on the ground, and no one would pick up a copper, at least so long as the wise women remained. He could pinch the bottom of every woman in sight, and even if she had apoplexy, she would walk away.
"What a pleasant walk," Elysian said dryly, "with such interesting sights and smells. Did I tell you I didn't get much sleep last night, Matt?"
"Do you want to die in bed?" Matt grumbled. They might as well all have stayed in bed. They were bloody useless here, that was for sure.
The Tyran snorted indignantly. Beslan laughed, but he probably thought Matt meant something else.
Across the Rahad they marched, until Rihanna finally stopped in front of a building exactly like every other, all flaking plaster and crumbling brick. The same Matt had followed another woman to yesterday. No laundry hung from these windows. Only rats lived in there. "In here," she said.
Elaine's eyes climbed slowly to the flat roof.
"Six,"
she murmured in tones of great satisfaction.
"Six,"
Nynaeve sighed, and Elaine patted her arm as though sympathizing with her.
"I wasn't really sure," she said.
So Nynaeve smiled and patted her.
Matt did not understand a word of it.
So the building had six floors. Women behaved very strangely sometimes. Well, most of the time. Inside, a long hallway carpeted with dust ran dimly to the back, the far end lost in shadows. Few of the doorways held doors, and those were rough planks. One opening, almost a third of the way down the hall, led to a narrow flight of steep stone-faced steps climbing upward. That was the way he had gone the day before, following footprints in the dust, but he thought some of those other openings must be crossing corridors. He had not taken time to look around then, but the building was too deep and too wide for this floor to be served by only the one they saw. It was too big for only one way in.
"Really, Matt," Nynaeve said when he told off Harnan and half the Red Arms to find any way back in and guard it.
Lan kept so close to his side he might have been glued there.
"Don't you see by now there's no need?"
Her tone was so mild that Elaine must have passed on the truth about Tylan, but if anything, that only soured his mood further. He did not want anyone to know. Bloody useless. But those dice were still rattling around in his head.
"Maybe Mogedion likes back doors," he said dryly.
Something chittered in the dark end of the hall, and one of the men with Harnan cursed loudly about rats.
"You told him,"
Nynaeve breathed furiously at Lan, one hand snapping shut on her braid. Elaine made an exasperated sound.
"This is no time to stop for an argument, Nynaeve. The bowl is upstairs. The bowl of the winds."
A small ball of light suddenly appeared, floating in front of her, and without waiting to see whether or not Nynaeve was coming, she gathered her skirts and darted up the stairs. Vannin dashed after her with a startling turn of speed for his bulk, followed by Rihanna and most of the wise women. Round-faced Tsumeko and Iaina, tall and dark and pretty despite the lines at the corners of her eyes, hesitated, then remained with Nynaeve. Matt would have gone, too, if Nynaeve and Lan had not been in his way.
"Would you let me by, Nynaeve?" he asked.
He deserved to be there, at least, when this fabulous bloody bull was uncovered.
"Nynaeve?"
She was so focused on Lan she seemed to have forgotten anyone else. Matt exchanged glances with Beslan, who grinned and squatted easily, with Korovin and the remaining Red Arms. Nalisian leaned against the wall and yawned ostentatiously, which was a mistake with all that dust about. The yawn turned into a coughing fit that darkened his face and doubled him over. Even that did not distract Nynaeve. Carefully, she took her hand away from her braid.
"I am not angry, Lan," she said.
"Yes, you are," he replied calmly, but he had to be told.
"Nynaeve," Matt said. "Lan?"
Neither one of them so much as flickered an eye his way.
"I would have told him when I was ready, Landman Dragoran!"
Her mouth clamped shut, but her lips writhed as though she were talking to herself.
"I will not be angry with you,"
she went on in a much milder tone, and that sounded addressed to herself as well. Very deliberately, she tossed her braid back over her shoulder, jerked that blue-plumed hat straight, and clasped her hands at her waist.
"If you say so," Lan said mildly.
Nynaeve quivered.
"Don't you take that tone with me," she shouted. "I tell you I'm not angry. Do you hear me?"
"Blood and ashes, Nynaeve," Matt growled. "He doesn't think you're angry. I don't think you're angry."
A good thing women had taught him to lie with a straight face.
Now can we go upstairs and fetch this bloody bull of the winds?"
"A marvelous idea," said a woman's voice from the door to the street. "Shall we go up together and surprise Elaine?"
Matt had never seen the two women who walked into the hall before, but their faces were Aes Sedai faces. The speaker's was long and cold as her voice, her companion's, framed by scores of thin dark braids, worked with colored beads. Nearly 2 dozen men crowded in behind them, bulky fellows with heavy shoulders, clubs and knives in hand. Matt shifted his grip on the Ashandarai. He knew trouble when he saw it, and the fox head on his chest was cool, almost cold against his skin. Somebody was holding the One Power. The two wise women nearly fell over, dropping curtsies as soon as they saw those ageless faces, but Nynaeve certainly knew trouble, too. Her mouth worked soundlessly as the pair came down the hallway, her face all consternation and self-recrimination. Behind him, Matt heard a sword leaving its scabbard, but he was not about to look back to see whose. Lan just stood there, which meant, of course, that he looked like a leopard ready to pounce.
"They're Black Aja," Nynaeve said at last. Her voice started faint and gained strength as she went on. "Phelion Boda and Ispen Shafar. They committed murder in the tower, and worse since. They're dark friends, and—" Her voice faltered for an instant. "They have shielded me."
The newcomers continued to advance serenely.
"Have you ever heard such nonsense, Ispen?"
the long-faced Aes Sedai asked her companion, who stopped grimacing at the dust long enough to smirk at Nynaeve.
"Ispen and I come from the White Tower, while Nynaeve and her friends are rebels against the Amaran Seat. They'll be punished severely for that, and so will anyone who helps them."
With a shock, Matt realized the woman did not know. She thought that he and Lan and the others were just hired strong arms. Phelion directed a smile at Nynaeve. It made a blizzard warm by comparison.
"There's someone who will be overjoyed to see you when we take you back, Nynaeve. She thinks you are dead. Better the rest of you go now. You don't want to meddle in Aes Sedai affairs. My men will see you to the river."
Without taking her eyes from Nynaeve, Phelion motioned for the men behind her to come forward. Lan moved. He did not draw his sword, and against Aes Sedai, he should have had no chance if he had. No chance in any case. But one moment he was standing still, and the next he had thrown himself at the pair. Just before he struck, he grunted as though hit hard, but he crashed into them, carrying both black sisters to the dusty floor. That opened the sluice gates wide. Lan pushed himself to hands and knees, shaking his head groggily, and one of the bulky fellows raised an iron-strapped club to smash his skull. Matt stabbed the fellow in the belly with his spear, as Beslan and Nalesian and the 5 Red Arms rushed to meet the Dark Friend's shouting charge. Lan staggered to his feet, sword sweeping out to open a Dark Friend from crotch to neck. There was not much room to work sword or Ashandara in the corridor, but the tight quarters were what allowed them to face odds of 2-1 or worse without being overcome in the first moment. Grunting men struggled with them face to face, elbowing each other for room to stab or swing a club at them. Small spaces remained clear around the Black Sisters and around Nynaeve. They saw to that themselves. A wiry Andron Red Arm almost bumped into Phelion, but at the last instant, he jerked into the air and flew across the hallway, knocking down 2 of the heavy-shouldered Dark Friends in his flight before smacking into the wall and sliding down, the back of his head leaving a bloody smear on the cracked, dusty plaster. A bald-headed Dark Friend squeezed through the line of defenders and rushed at Nynaeve with outstretched knife. He yelled as his feet were suddenly jerked back from him, a yell that cut off when his face hit the floor so hard that his head bounced. Obviously, Nynaeve was no longer shielded, and if the chilly silver fox head sliding around Matt's chest as he fought was not enough indication that she and the Black Sisters were in some sort of struggle, the way they glared at her and she at them, ignoring the battle around them, shouted the fact. The two wise women looked on in horror. They had their curved knives in their fists, but they huddled against the wall, staring from Nynaeve to the other two with eyes wide and mouths hanging open.
"Fight!" Nynaeve snapped at them.
She turned her head just a fraction, so she could see them as well as Phelion and Ispan.
"I cannot do it alone. They're linked. If you don't fight them, they will kill you. You know about them now."
The wise woman gaped at her, as though she had suggested spitting in the queen's face. In the midst of shouts and grunts, Ispan laughed melodiously. In the midst of shouts and grunts, a shrill scream echoed down the stairs. Nynaeve's head swung that way. Suddenly she staggered, and her head swung back like a wounded badger's, with a skull that should have made Felian and Ispan leave right then if they had any sense. Nynaeve spared an agonized glance for Matt, though.
"There was channeling upstairs," she said through her teeth. "There's trouble."
Matt hesitated. More likely Elaine had seen a rat. More likely... He managed to knock aside a dagger thrust at his ribs, but there was no room to stab back with the Ashendari or use the haft like a quarterstaff. Beslan stabbed past him and took his attacker through the heart.
"Please, Matt," Nynaeve said tightly.
She never begged. She would cut her own throat first.
"Please."
With a curse, Matt pulled himself out of the fight and dashed up the steep, narrow stairs, taking all six flights in the dark stairwell at a dead run. There was not a single window to give light. If it was just a rat, he was going to shake Elaine till her teeth. He burst out onto the top floor, not much brighter than the stairwell with only one window at the street end, burst into a scene from nightmare. Women lay sprawled everywhere. Elaine was one, half on her back against the wall, eyes closed. Vannin crouched on his knees, blood streaming from nose and ears, feebly trying to pull himself up against the wall. The last woman on her feet, Janira, fled toward Matt as soon as she saw him. He had thought of her as a hawk, with her hooked beak of a nose and sharp cheekbones, but her face was pure terror now, those dark eyes wide and stark.
"Help me!"
she screamed at him, and a man caught her from behind. He was an ordinary-looking fellow, maybe a little older than Matt, of the same height and slender in a plain gray coat. Smiling, he took Janira's head between his hands and twisted sharply. The sound of her neck breaking was like a dry branch snapping. He let her drop in a boneless heap and gazed down at her. For a moment, his smile looked rapturous. By the light of a pair of lanterns, a small knot of men just beyond Vannin were prying open a door to the squeal of rusted hinges, but Matt hardly noticed. His eyes went from Janira's crumpled corpse to Elaine. He had promised to keep her safe for Rand. He had promised. With a cry, he launched himself at the killer, Ashendari extended. Matt had seen Murdral move, but this fellow was quicker, hard as that was to believe. He just seemed to flow from in front of the spear, and seizing the haft, he pivoted, flinging Matt past him 5 paces down the hall. Breath left when he hit the floor in a small cloud of dust. So did the Ashendari. Struggling for air, he pushed himself up, fox head dangling from his open shirt. Dragging a knife from under his coat, he flung himself at the man again, just as Nalesian appeared at the head of the stairs, sword in hand. Now they had him, however quick he... The man made a Murdral seem stiff. He slid around Nalesian's thrust as though there was not a bone in his body, right hand shooting out to seize Nalesian's throat. His hand came away with a liquid ripping sound. Blood fountained past Nalesian's beard. His sword dropped, ringing on the dusty stone floor, and he clutched both hands to his ruined neck, red running through his fingers as he fell. Matt crashed into the killer's back, and they all three hit the floor together. He had no compunctions about stabbing a man in the back when it was necessary, especially a man who could tear somebody's throat out. He should have let Nalesian stay in bed. The thought came sadly as he drove the blade home hard, then a second time, a third. The man twisted in his grip. It should not have been possible, but somehow the fellow rolled over beneath him, pulling the knife hilt out of his hand. Nalesian's staring eyes and bloody throat were a reminder right before his eyes. Desperately, he grabbed the man's wrists, one hand slipping a little in the blood that ran down the fellow's hand. The man smiled at him. With a knife sticking out of his side, he smiled.
"He wants you dead as much as he wants her," he said softly.
And as if Matt was not holding him at all, his hands moved toward Matt's head, driving Matt's arms back. Matt pushed frantically, threw all of his weight against the fellow's arms to no avail. Light, he might as well have been a child fighting a grown man. The fellow was making a game of it, taking his bloody time. Hands touched his head. Where was his flaming luck? He gave a heave with what seemed his last strength, and the medallion fell against the man's cheek. The man screamed. Smoke rose around the edges of the fox head, and a sizzle like bacon frying. Convulsively, he hurled Matt away with hands and feet both. This time, Matt flew 10 paces and slid. When he scrambled to his feet, half-dazed, the man was already up, hands trembling at his face. A raw red brand marked where the fox head had fallen. Gingerly, Matt fingered the medallion. It was cool. Not the cool of someone channeling nearby. Maybe they were still at it below, but that was too far off. Just the cool of silver. He had no notion what this fellow was, except that he certainly was not human. But between that burn and 3 stab wounds, with the knife hilt still jutting out beneath his arm, he had to be slowed enough for Matt to get past him to the stairs. Avenging Elaine was all very well, and Elysian too, but it was not going to happen today, apparently, and there was no call to supply a reason for avenging Matt Cawthon. Jerking the knife out of his side, the man hurled it at him. Matt snagged it out of the air without thinking. Tom had taught him to juggle, and Tom said he had the quickest hands he had ever seen. Flipping the knife around so he held it properly, point slanted up, he noticed the gleaming blade, and his heart sank. No blood. There should have at least been a smear of red, but the steel shone bright and clean. Maybe even 3 stab wounds was not going to slow this, whatever he was. He risked a glance over his shoulder. The other men were streaming out of that door they had pried open, the door those footprints had led him to yesterday, but their arms seemed full of rubbish, small half-rotted chests, a cask with cloth-wrapped objects bulging through missing staves, even a broken chair and a cracked mirror. They must have had orders to take everything. Paying no attention whatever to Matt, they hurried toward the far end of the hall and vanished around a corner. There had to be another set of stairs back there. Maybe he could follow them at a distance. Maybe... Just before the doorway they had come out of, Vannon made another effort to stand and fell back. Matt bit back a curse. Lugging Vannon was going to slow him, but if his luck was in... It had not saved Elaine, but maybe... From the corner of his eye, he saw her move, lifting a hand to her head. The man in the gray coat saw it, too. With a smile, he turned toward her. Sighing, Matt tucked the useless knife into its scabbard.
"You can't have her," he said loudly.
"Promises." One jerk broke the leather cord around his neck. The silver fox head dangled a foot below his fist. It made a low hum as he whirled it in a double loop.
"You can't bloody have her!"
He started forward, keeping the medallion spinning. The first step was the hardest, but he had a promise to keep. The fellow's smile faded. Watching the flashing fox head warily, he backed away on his toes. The same light that glittered on the whirling silver, from the single window, made a halo around him. If Matt could drive him that far... Maybe he could see whether a 6-story drop would do what a knife could not. Brand livid on his face, the fellow backed away, sometimes half-reaching as if to try grabbing past the medallion. And suddenly, he darted to one side, into one of the rooms. This one had a door that he pulled shut behind him. Matt heard the bar drop. Maybe he should have left it there, but without thinking, he raised a foot and slammed the heel of his boot against the center of the door. Dust leaped off the rough wood. A second kick, and rotten bar catches gave way, along with a rusted hinge. The door fell in, hanging at a slanted angle. The room was not entirely dark. A little light reached it from the window at the end of the hall, just one door away, and a broken triangle of mirror leaning against the far wall spread a faint illumination. That mirror let him see everything without going in. Aside from that and a piece of a chair, there was nothing else to see. The only openings were the doorway and a rat hole beside the mirror, but the man in the gray coat was gone.
"Matt," Elaine called faintly.
He hurried away from the room as much as toward her. There was shouting somewhere below, but Nynaeve and the rest would have to take care of themselves for the moment. Elaine was sitting up, working her jaw and wincing, when he knelt beside her. Dust covered her dress, her hat hung askew, some of the plumes broken, and her red-gold hair looked as if she had been dragged by it.
"He hit me so hard," she said painfully. "I don't think anything is broken, but..."
Her eyes latched onto his, and if he had ever thought she looked at him as if he were a stranger, he saw it for true now.
I saw what you did, Matt. With him. We might as well have been chickens in a box with a weasel. Channeling wouldn't touch him. The flows melted the way they do with your...
Glancing at the medallion still hanging from his fist, she drew a breath that did interesting things to that oval cutout.
Thank you, Matt. I apologize for everything I ever did or thought.
She sounded as though she really meant it.
I keep building up toe toward you,
she smiled ruefully.
But I am not going to let you beat me. You are going to have to let me save you at least once to balance matters.
I'll see what I can arrange, he said dryly, stuffing the medallion into a coat pocket.
Toe? Beat her?
Light. The woman was definitely spending too much time with Avienda. Once he helped her to her feet, she looked at the hallway, at Vannon with his blood-smeared face and the women lying where they had fallen, and she grimaced.
Oh, light, she breathed. Oh, blood and bloody flaming ashes.
Despite the situation, he gave a start. It was not just that he had never expected to hear those words out of her mouth. They seemed peculiar, as if she knew the sounds but not the meanings. Somehow, they made her sound younger than she looked. Shaking off his arm, she discarded her hat, just tossing it aside, and hurried to kneel beside the nearest wise woman, Rihanna, and take her head in both hands. The woman lay limp, face down, and arms stretched out as though she had been tripped up running. Toward the room everyone had been after, toward her attacker. Not away.
This one is beyond me,
Elaine muttered.
Where is Nynaeve? Why didn't she come up with you, Matt? Nynaeve! She shouted toward the stairs.
No need to shriek like a cat, Nynaeve growled, appearing in the stairwell.
She was looking back over her shoulder down the stairs, though.
You hold her tight, you hear me?
She shrieked like a cat. She carried her hat and shook it at whoever she was shouting at.
You let her get away, too, and I'll box your ears till you hear bells next year.
She turned then, and her eyes nearly bulged out of her head.
The light shine on us, she breathed,
hurrying to bend over Janira. One touch, and she straightened, wincing painfully. He could have told her the woman was dead. Nynaeve seemed to take death personally. Giving herself a shake, she went on to the next. To Marla, and this time it appeared there was something she could heal. It also appeared Tamara's injuries were not simple because she knelt over her, frowning.
What happened here, Matt?
She demanded without looking around at him. Her tone made him sigh. He might have known she would decide it was his fault.
Well, Matt, what happened? Will you speak up, man, or do I have to...
He never learned what threat she intended to offer. Lan had followed Nynaeve out of the stairwell, of course, with Sumeiko right at his heels. The stout wise woman took one look at the hall and immediately lifted her skirts and ran to Rihanna. She did give Elaine one worried glance before lowering herself to her knees and beginning to move her hands over Rihanna in an odd way. That was what pulled Nynaeve up short.
What are you doing? She said sharply.
Not halting what she was doing to Tamarla, she spared the round-faced woman only short glances, but they were as piercing as her voice.
Where did you learn that?
Sumeiko gave a start, but her hands did not stop.
Forgive me, Aes Sedai,
she said in a breathless, disjointed rush.
I know I'm not supposed to. She'll die if I don't... I know I wasn't supposed to keep trying to... I just wanted to learn, Aes Sedai. Please.
No, no, go on,
Nynaeve said absently. Most of her attention was fixed on the woman under her hands, but not all.
You seem to know a few things even I... That is to say... You have a very interesting way with the flows. I suspect you'll find that a great many sisters want to learn from you.
Half under her breath, she added,
Maybe now they'll leave me alone.
Sumeiko could not have heard that last, but what she did hear dropped her chin to her considerable chest. Her hands barely paused, though.
Elaine,
Nynaeve went on,
would you look for the bull, please? I suspect that door is the one.
She nodded to the correct door, standing open like half a dozen others. That made Matt blink until he saw two tiny cloth-wrapped bundles lying in front of it where the looters must have dropped them.
Yes,
Elaine muttered.
Yes, I can do that much at least.
Half raising her hand toward Vannon, still on his knees, she let it fall with a sigh and strode through the doorway, which almost immediately emitted a cloud of dust and the sound of coughing. The more-than-plump wise woman had not been the only one following Nynaeve and Lan. Eina stalked out of the stairwell, forcing the terror on her dark friend in front of her by means of an arm twisted up into her back and a fist clutching the back of her neck. Eina's jaw was set, her mouth tight. Her face was half-frightened certainty that she would be skinned alive for manhandling an Aes Sedai, and half-determination to hold on no matter what. Nynaeve had that effect on people sometimes. The Black Sister was wide-eyed with terror, sagging so she surely would have fallen except for Eina's grip. She must have been shielded, certainly, and with equal surety, she probably would have chosen being skinned to whatever was going to happen to her. Tears began leaking from her eyes, and her mouth sagged in silent sobs. Behind them came Beslan, who gave a sad sigh at the sight of Nalisian, and a sadder for the women, and then Harnan, and three of the Red Arms, Fergan, Gordoran, and Metwin. Three who had been at the front of the building. Harnan and two of the others had bloody gashes in their coats, but Nynaeve must have healed them below. They did not move as if they still had injuries. They looked very subdued, though. "What happened at the back?" Matt asked quietly.
"Burn me if I know," Harnan replied. "We walked right into a knot of shoulder-thumpers with knives in the dark. There was one moved like a snake."
He shrugged, touching the blood-stained hole in his coat absentmindedly.
"One of them got a knife into me, and the next I remember is opening my eyes with Nynaeve Sedai bending over me, and Mendare and the others dead as yesterday's mutton."
Matt nodded. "One who moved like a snake, and got out of rooms like one, too." He looked around the hallway. Rihanna and Tamarla were on their feet, straightening their dresses, of course, and Vannon peering into the room where Elaine was apparently trying out some more curses, seemingly with no more success than earlier. It was hard to tell because of the coughing. Nynaeve stood, helping up Sibella, a scrawny yellow-haired woman, and Sameko was still working on Femella, with her pale honey hair and big brown eyes. But he was never going to admire Melora's bosom again. Rihanna knelt to straighten her limbs and close her eyes, while Tamara performed the same service for Janira. Two wise women dead, and six of his Red Arms. Killed by a man the power would not touch.
"I found it!"
Elaine shouted excitedly. She strode back out into the hall, holding a wide round bundle of rotted cloth she would not let Vannon take from her. Coated in gray from head to toe, she looked as if she had lain down and rolled in the dust.
"We have the Bowl of the Winds, Nynaeve!"
"In that case," Matt announced, "we are bloody well getting out of here now."
Nobody argued. Oh, Nynaeve and Elaine insisted on all the men making sacks out of their jackets for things they rooted out of the room. They even loaded the wise women down, and themselves. And Rihanna had to go down and recruit men to carry their dead down the boat landing. But nobody argued. He doubted if the Rahad had ever seen as odd a procession as made its way to the river, or one that moved more quickly.